Irish Times Inside Business podcast in association with Your Next Dublin. Hello and welcome to Inside Business with Ciarán Hancock, a podcast from the Irish Times. This week I'm joined by phone by Brian Hayes, Chief Executive of Banking and Payments Federation Ireland. Last weekend the Federation announced that its member banks had facilitated 45,000 payment breaks for mortgage customers, while 14,000 breaks were either agreed or in the pipeline for SMEs. So how are banks coping with this crisis? What can customers who are in financial difficulty because of COVID-19 expect from their bank? And how are bank staff coping working on the front line amid the pandemic? Brian, you're very welcome to the show. It might be said that just when they thought it was safe to go back into the water after a decade of crisis following the financial crash, along comes COVID-19 to whack the banks again. Just maybe outline to us what impact this is having on Irish banks.
Good afternoon, Ciarán. Yeah, I mean, it's a big impact, not just on the banking sector, but every other industry of the economy. Effectively, you know, the economy is in free fall. And until such a time as we come out of lockdown, none of us will know the full impact on the banking sector, the payment sector, but across the other sectors as well. I suppose banking is recognized as a key sector for the economy so that the economy continues to function. And our member banks have continued in very difficult circumstances to provide key services right the way across the economy. If you look at the massive uptake in the number of contactless payments every single day, the way in which banks have reorganized themselves in recent weeks to meet with private customers, mortgage customers and business customers' needs is astonishing. But we really won't know the full impact of this until we move out of the lockdown mode. And given the fact about 40% of the economy has been put into the freezer effectively, and we see about 25% of the labour market is in some kind of support from the government, there is clearly going to be a huge bill at the end of this, a huge impact on the economy. We saw the IMF figures out yesterday in terms of suggesting about a 7% contraction in the Irish economy this year. But it's across the world, and I suppose the difference now vis-a-vis where the country was 2009, 2010, which was a banking crisis, is that I suppose at one level, half of all SMEs do not have debt right now, which is a good thing. We go in with the banks with a much stronger capital ratio position and liquidity position by comparison to where we were 10 years ago. We also, it's fair to say, I think it's, you know, unlike some other EU countries, we have a lot of expertise and knowledge at dealing with non-performing loans, because that's been a huge impact on the bank's balance sheet in the last decade or so. So, you know, we go in with a different set of issues. And I think that the fundamental responsibility on this industry and other industries will be around trying to reboot the economy. We're working right now across our member banks and across our members on a strategic plan to help the country come back from this and especially help businesses to reboot when we come out of lockdown, because we recognise that for the great majority of businesses, big and small, about 80% of all lending is still through their banks. You know, banks are, whether people like it or not, we are the capital intermediaries, the capital investors, the capital lenders to the real economy. And banks will be very aware of our responsibility in terms of lending, providing working capital, making sure that we can cut through some of the bureaucracy for our business customers when they get out of lockdown and try to get back on their feet again. So we're aware of our responsibilities, but the sector is in a very different position now on a liquidity basis, capital reserve position, vis-a-vis where we were 10 years ago. And I think, you know, the fact that we are so well capitalized today puts us in a good position in terms of coming back from this crisis like every other bank in Europe.
Yeah, we'll come back to non-performing loans perhaps in a few minutes, but let's just talk through some of the numbers. The Federation at the weekend put out a release saying that 45,000 mortgage payment breaks had been agreed with customers, and something like 14,000 were either agreed or in train with SMEs. Now, I'm presuming, is that just the first wave? I mean, the 45,000 of mortgage customers, for example, is 5%. So that's 1 in 20 of mortgage account holders out there with the Irish banks is being given a payment break of 3 months. But I'm just wondering, is that the first wave? Are we going to see, will there be more to come? I mean, where I presume the banks have done some scenario planning on this. Where might it ultimately land?
Well, it's hard to predict because we're very much in the hands of government and the public health officials as to when they decide to get the economy working again. So, you know, to your point, no one knows the full number of breaks in terms of applications. Effectively, this scheme is up and running in the last 3 weeks. Initially, we saw a 400% spike in the number of calls and online applications coming into our member banks. That has gone reduced a little bit in the last week to 10 days. And I think some of that was helped by the fact that the government's employment support schemes, guaranteeing 70% income for a whole cohort of people, did help for people to continue to make their mortgage repayments. I think for a lot of people in the economy, they want to continue to pay their mortgage. They don't want to get into a position of the break because that has to be paid back over the full life of the mortgage. So I think, you know, it was really important that we were out there first as an industry across all sectors of the industry offering this to people, and then that we actually managed to make those applications real for those customers. But as to how many will emerge in the future, no one really knows. I mean, there is an expectation because this has happened in other EU countries that the potential of a 6 month break may well apply. We're in discussions right now with our regulator, the Central Bank of Ireland, and with the industry to see how that might work. Because, you know, if you don't pay for 6 months, that's a pretty large amount of money that you owe over the term of the mortgage. And, you know, we've always made it clear this is not a moratorium. It's not a holiday. It's simply a payment break, as we can provide for under the existing codes and under the EBA, who've made it very clear that we can provide for this. So, you know, payment discipline is important, and making not just for banks, but for the whole economy. I know that point has been made consistently by the Central Bank of Ireland. And we don't really know how big of an issue this could go. But there are real costs for the banks in this, because over a 3 month or indeed potentially over a 6 month period, we won't be able to obtain mortgage payments from people. And of course, there's a cost for the banks in the here and now.
So these talks on a 6 month break, what stage are you at?
Well, our discussions are ongoing with the Central Bank. We do have the European Banking Authority, the EBA guidelines, which make provision for this. I think our big concern was for sound borrowers who, through no fault of their own, saw an implosion of income. It would be utterly unfair if those sound borrowers, you know, in day 91 or the first day after the 3 month break, were automatically put into a forbearance category, into a non-performing loan category. That would be utterly unfair for them, because immediately there'd be implications for their own credit rating for lenders from that particular customer, but equally unfair for the bank, because of course, once you're down the road of a non-performing loan and under a forbearance category, there are additional capital requirements for the banks. So we've got to work through with our regulator how this might work, and throughout the whole process, the Central Bank of Ireland have been taking a very fair, pragmatic and realistic view of what's happening for lenders and borrowers right now. And we'll see the outcome of that. Some people won't get through this, and that's the reality that we've got to face. And inevitably, it will lead to more non-performing loans. But we've got to make sure that we minimise that in terms of the regulatory treatment, and especially try to get those people back up on their feet again. If the length of time is 6 months, for some people it won't be. I mean, we're all hoping that the economy is going to go back working again in a few weeks' time. It may well be the case that, say, construction and manufacturing go first, and a 3 month break is sufficient for people. But we know under the EBA guidelines that they have set at a European level January 30th as the deadline for applying for the first break. But, you know, for a lot of customers, as I said earlier, they want to continue payments. They don't want to they don't want to lose the discipline of the payment. And we're going to have to work with customers on a case by case basis, which is putting a lot of pressure on the banks to make sure that we have those conversations with customers.
Brian, none of us know how long this is going to continue, the disruption that is. I accept that the restrictions will be lifted in some shape or form in the coming weeks, I would imagine, at least. But we're told that it could be 12 months before we have a vaccine. So you have to imagine that a lot of restrictions are still going to be in place for a long time to come. So what if we go beyond the six-month period? How do the banks deal with that?
Well, that is very much all up in the air right now, because if you go beyond the six-month period, the question will be, how do you treat that loan within your loan book? And that's an issue that you know, we're having discussions with the CBI and other European supervisors on right now. My own sense is that I think we have to make the distinction between people who will get back on their feet, who can afford to pay again, who are sound borrowers, who have never had any history of having had their mortgage restructured, as against a group of people who may not get their job back and for a very long, long time. And in that distinct category, that latter group of people, to try to put in place some potential restructuring for them will be an option, obviously, that we're going to have to look at in the future. You know, this, Kieran, more than anyone, the banks have had a situation of having a non-performing loan book of at the worst point, about 15-16%. We got it down to 11%, then 8%. Now we're just over 5%, which is kind of the outer limit of the European average. And there's an ECB expectation, well, certainly before this crisis, that we get it down to 3%. So this is coming at the worst possible time, given all the progress that's been made by the Irish banking sector and customers in getting that NPEs down to a level. So it's inevitable that there will be a lot of casualties from this, and how we treat those people and how we work through their particular circumstances is going to be a big challenge for the banks. But as I said, there's a lot of expertise now in a way that there wasn't in the future. And we also have a very significant section of the Irish loan book in credit servicing firms. They own in excess of 100,000 mortgages in the country. So I think a key issue for the central bank was how we could, as an industry body, work with the credit servicing firms, non-bank lenders, and of course our retail banks, the larger banks which have the larger section of the mortgage loan book, to try to work up an acceptable solution for people. But to your point, people will not get through this, and you know, losses will emerge right the way across the sector, and that's just the inevitability of a recession that we're facing.
Of the 45,000 payment breaks out of interest, were any of those customers already in a forbearance arrangement with the bank?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've about 780,000 mortgages in total. About 100,000 of those have already been mortgages that have been restructured, what we call an ARA, an alternative arrangement system that's been put in place. They have a slightly greater due diligence to go through in terms of the requirements the banks need. But some of those people have been seeking breaks as well. And as I said, you know, not everyone who's in that category at the moment will need that break for a six-month period. We very much hope that a lot of those people will be back up on their feet again in a short period of time as the economy comes out of lockdown.
So what's going on for SMEs? What kind of assistance are they being offered?
Well, I suppose, as we said initially, it's working capital. And, you know, we're conscious of the responsibility we have to business customers. But what we've seen in the last number of weeks since we rolled out these breaks is that of the 17,000 SME breaks that have gone through the system, it's about 2-to-1 in terms of breaks vis-a-vis working capital requests. I mean, a lot of small businesses and micro businesses just don't have any cash coming in at the moment. It's a cash in, cash out problem that they face. For some larger businesses who have debt positions, they've sought the break and they have received those breaks. And how we treat those breaks into the future will be a live issue that we're going to have to address. Obviously, for government, a key question will be around the kind of lending capacity into the future. We're working right now on a very substantial piece of work about how the banks can help to reboot the economy when we come out of lockdown. And we hope to be in a position in the next week or two to produce our ideas on that. I mean, a lot of those ideas are on the whole question of a credit guarantee. We know we have the SBCI scheme in place at the moment, and a lot of good work by the Strategic Banking Corporation has gone in to the banks and with the government to getting the full amount of money up from about 250 million to 650 million in two different categories. They offer a guarantee of about 80%. And I think, you know, we're working with the SBCI to make sure that we kind of reduce those barriers that might exist from a firm from taking on credit. But I mean, if you look at where SMEs are in Ireland right now, I mean, they haven't a huge amount of debt on their plate. That has been an issue in the last number of years. The level of credit formation in Irish SMEs has not been good in terms of investment capacity. There have only been about 20% requests for credit last year, according to the annual survey by the Department of Finance in terms of the credit demand survey. So the demand has been about 20%. 80% of SMEs haven't looked for any credit facility from their banks in the course of the last year. Now, that's inevitably going to change. So we've got to make sure that we have a good guarantee system in place. We've got to ensure that we've export credit insurance in place for businesses, our exporters. I suppose the difference this time to 10 years ago is when we were coming out of the crash 10 years ago, firstly, the euro was devalued vis-a-vis sterling and the dollar, two of our biggest export markets. We had both the UK and the US economy in a much better position than now because, of course, their stimulus was about a year and a half, 2 years ahead of the euro stimulus. So our SMEs were able to deleverage. There was a reduction in terms of wage price inflation here, which gave us a competitive advantage. So needless to say, the rest of the world is in the same position. So we do need to help our exporters. And I think the whole issue of insurance guarantees into the future will be crucially important. How we help the construction sector. I mean, we still have, we've managed to get housing output to about 22,000-23,000 from last year, up from a very low level. We need to continue to ramp that up in a circumstance where there's still an insatiable demand for housing. So the banks are a fundamental part of the supply line in new housing in terms of credit formation to Irish construction firms. So we've got to work hard with government and others to make sure we have the right schemes coming forward to really reboot the construction sector as well. 10 years ago, what was it, a quarter of a million, 250,000 people worked in construction. Now it's about 130,000, I think. So the banks were very exposed 10 years ago when it came to the level of the bubble and the credit demand that was there in the construction sector. It's much more manageable now. And our loan books are in a better position and our liquidity is in a better position. So sure, we want to help very much the rebooting of the economy, and we've got to get that right in terms of the regulatory treatment of our lending.
Brian, while it's admirable that the banks are making working capital and overdrafts available to companies affected by COVID-19, is there a risk that they might be lending to some companies that just don't have a trading future? And they might be lending to companies who just simply won't be able to pay it back. I mean, some companies just won't recover from COVID, will they?
No, I think that's a fair point. And I think the real challenge, Kieran, is, and I think the banks are doing this right now, is engaging with their business customers, asking them where they are right now. If they're in lockdown, part of that 40% of the economy, when do they think it's likely that they can reboot their own business? What kind of supports they will provide? Banks have a huge wealth of knowledge at sector-specific areas. And I think if you look at some of the sectors who are really going to be challenged by this, the hospitality sector, the hotel sector, the retail sector, you know, there's a lot of expertise with banks who can actually help those particular sectors. And I think the other thing is we're going to need in each sector a different suite of measures. If you look at where hotels stood 10 years ago, the level of indebtedness across the hotel sector in Ireland was 7 billion. It's now 2.5 billion. If you look at restaurants lending in 2008, 10, 11 years ago, it was 800 million. It's now 300 million. Bars, key part of the hospitality industry, 3.5 billion 10 years ago, 760 million today. So the level of debt within the sectors that are most affected by this is dramatically less than it was 10, 11 years ago, which is a good thing. And I think, you know, the level of sector support that we can bring sector by sector, at targeting measures to each of the sectors, will be crucially important as well. So, you know, to your point, some businesses will not get through this. Some businesses and sectors will be more affected than other sectors. But we're just going to have to work with our customers to see, is there a way out of this for people, and see also what kind of support are the government going to provide. One of my concerns is right now, if you look at, you know, everyone's talking about the fact that state aid rules have been put to one side by the European Commission, which is a good thing. It will help countries across the Eurozone system really get cash to the front line, you know, government by government, sector by sector. And given the change in the state rules, the state aid rules, the relaxation, that's a good thing. The dilemma is, if our government does not provide the same level of support to Irish SMEs, to Irish micro business, in terms of cash injection, our businesses will be at a hugely disadvantaged position vis-a-vis other Eurozone countries. And we're going to need to keep a very close eye on this as a country to make sure that our SMEs aren't disadvantaged over other SMEs in other member states who have seen a relaxation of state aid rules. We need to keep a very close focus on this, because a lot of those businesses will not want more debt. They will not want credit. They just want cash. And the government will be under, understandably, significant pressure to deliver some of that, especially to the smaller businesses. So we need to keep an eye on what other countries are doing to make sure we're not at a competitive disadvantage.
Brian, how are the banks themselves coping with this? I mean, in terms of the measures they're putting in place, let's say, for frontline staff at branches that are still open, are any staff being furloughed? Are there pay cuts? What kind of costs have the banks themselves incurred because of this crisis?
Well, I mean, it's too early to give any indication of the cost, and I suppose they'll all come out into the market ultimately, bank by bank, especially the public banks, in terms of their comments to the market. But there's been a huge operational challenge for banks around this. We've seen some banks having to close, albeit for a temporary basis, some smaller banks to make sure that their footfall continues throughout the community. About 50% of staff, Kieran, have had to change what they do in terms of the operation. People are now working from home. People have been brought into much bigger call centres and centres to process not just calls, but obviously online applications for breaks and the like. Banks haven't been reducing pay. They've recognised the extraordinary commitment of the 27,000 people who work in retail banking, who themselves are worried about themselves, their own health, their own family's health, in a circumstance where they're dealing with customers. If you walk into a branch today, even with the 50% reduction in footfall, you'll see the kind of measures that banks had to put in place, as other retail sectors had to do. We have put in place very good supports for vulnerable customers, customers who are cocooning. We've put together dedicated phone lines to help people over 70 especially come to terms with some of their banking needs. We've had to put supports in for specific care workers. You've seen what we've done in terms of increasing the contactless payment from 30 to 50 limit. We've seen also some banks reducing their fees and a massive fraud awareness campaign. So we've had to reorientate the industry, if you like, to deal with the needs of business and personal customers right now. And that's been an extraordinary challenge for bank staff, who've done a super job in responding to this. I've always made the point that people who work in banks are frontline. They are systemically important industries for the country. And I think especially those people who've been working under very pressurized environments in the last number of weeks, it's been a big challenge, and it will be ultimately a big cost to the banks long term.
I guess this is going to kick out the time frame for which we get our money back, Brian, in terms of the bailout of the banks, AIB and permanent TSB, still owe the taxpayer a lot of money, a lot of billions, and share prices have been whacked over recent weeks because of this global pandemic. So we're going to have to wait a lot longer for that payback, aren't we?
Well, I think a lot of the bank's success or otherwise will be inextricably connected with where the economy is, because the banks play an absolutely crucial role in, you know, firing up the economy or trying to protect the economy in a circumstance of non-performing loans. You know, the three banks that you refer to, Permanent TSB, AIB and Bank of Ireland, have collectively repaid to the Irish taxpayer $20 billion between COCOs, the sale of shares, dividends and the cost of the guarantee. It's about $20 billion so far, and there's another $10 billion to go. Obviously, it's more a challenging environment now in a circumstance where bank shares are down. But I mean, they're down everywhere. And I suppose this comes on the tail of the uncertainty of Brexit, which in itself was a challenge to the sector. But I mean, if you look back at what the IMF said yesterday, Kieran, in terms of the contraction this year and their view that the economy could come back to about 5% growth next year and beyond, you know, I think we will come back from this. We have a strong sector. I think it's a much leaner and fitter sector. It's a sector that is very cognizant of the kind of open banking requirements, the contactless banking payment environment that we're all working in. And it's a sector that I think really is at the cutting edge for some of the kind of changes that are going to occur within retail banking more generally. So, you know, we're prepared for this at one level because we're very well capitalized, as I said earlier. But there are challenges there. We did see, of course, a very significant reduction in profitability in the sector last year. A lot of that is down to the lower for longer interest rate environment. And I don't think that's going to change clearly over the course of the next year or two. But we are going to have to do, you know, more with less. And I think that's the same reality for lots of other industries right now. But I think the important thing is that we've got to be at the center of the reboot, the center of Ireland's comeback, the center of credit formation. And you know, we go into this, you know, hopefully this post-COVID environment in a very difficult circumstance for the country, but we go in a much stronger position ultimately. And I think that will actually be a benefit to the industry in the long term.
And Brian, there is a view that the Irish banks were a bit slow to scrap their dividend payments. This is the money they pay out to shareholders each year, and that they had to be pushed into it by the ECB. Now, it's a view held not just about Irish banks, but banks in other countries as well. But how would you respond to that?
I think that's unfair. And I know a lot about this because the European Banking Federation, of which BPFI is a member, were working on this issue before the SSM through the ECB gave any opinion. And in fairness to Mr. Enria, and indeed Jean-Pierre Mustier, who's president of the EBF, we were working on this issue. We recognized the dividends issue for 2019 and 2020 and the importance of taking a responsible attitude to this. So I don't think the banks were pushed into it at all. If anything, if you look at the EBF comments in the Financial Times 2 days before the SSM-ECB decision, it was clearly we were recognizing this and we were in discussions with Mr. Enria on this. So I think, you know, in fairness to the industry at a pan-European level, they recognise the importance of using potential dividends for last year that had yet to be given, or potential dividends this year, for the purposes of capital, for the purposes of using that capital for new lending, and for the purposes of trying to get the economy back into a working order again. So I think those criticisms are unfair.
After the crash, Brian, a lot of banks quit the Irish market. A lot of foreign banks quit the Irish market. We were reduced to just five left standing. And here we are now with another major crisis. And it's obviously going to impact not just the Irish economy, but the global economy as well. And the IMF yesterday talking about it, the impact being akin to the Great Depression in the 1930s. I'm just wondering, and not an easy one for you to answer, I accept, but when this is over, will the five banks, in your opinion, still be standing, or will maybe one of the international banks have just folded its tent and decided it's just not worth the hassle? Will all the Irish-owned banks still be standing at the end of this?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, you know, yeah, you are right in saying, Kieran, 10 years ago we had 10, you know, retail banking licenses. We now have five. Two of those international banks, KBC and Ulster Bank through Royal Bank of Scotland, have remained through thick and thin, and they're building a good business in this country. notwithstanding you know, the challenges that they faced when the bubble came about 10 years ago. And we have three other banks, Permanent TSB, AIB and Bank of Ireland, in different conditions of state ownership, given the public shareholding, some with a minority, others with a majority. So I'm very confident that they will remain into the future, all of them. And also, like, I mean, I don't think we should underestimate, we now have three other SSM banks in Ireland, Citibank, who've been here for over 40 years, admittedly, Bank of America, and of course, Barclays Bank. Barclays and Bank of America, their European headquarters for their SSM bank is in Dublin, which is a huge form of resilience also, to have those large international banks in Ireland. So, you know, the banking and payment sector, despite the challenges of a decade ago, is still in a very strong position, and I think is still leading in terms of what we can offer. The wider financial services piece in Ireland is also strong, and I think, you know, it's a form of strength for the country, particularly in employment terms, the quality of employment, and what you've seen in the last number of years, whereby one in every three of the new FS jobs created are outside of Dublin. You know, we're going to need that footprint, that financial services footprint in terms of job viability into the future. And the banks will be absolutely central players in that. So I'm very confident about the future because we're in a different position. And because of the capital and liquidity ratios that I referred to earlier, there are challenges ahead. Of that, there is no doubt. But I think there's a great resolve across the sector to work together on things, you know, in a non-competitive way, which actually help the whole sector and help the economy, but also compete strongly with each other and have a strong competitive environment in terms of new products and new projects for businesses and personal customers. And I think the more we can do that, the better. Those international banks have stayed in Ireland for a long time. They employ a lot of people. They built up a lot of expertise, and having that additional international groups here in Ireland is of great benefit to the sector in the long run.
Yeah, Brian, you had a long political career, as people will know, and you're, what, about a year or so now into the job with the BPFI. How has that year been? I suspect you didn't imagine something like this would come along in your first year.
I probably learnt more about banking in the last 3 weeks than I did in the last 6 months or so, in that it's been a very intense period, especially working with all of the banks on the payment break and making sure that the industry responded to all of the issues that have come up publicly and privately and across all our stakeholders. So it's been a real topsy-turvy few times, but it's fascinating at one level. I've learned a lot from it. I'm working with a great bunch of people in BPFI, really, really smart people who've a great understanding of the sector and a great understanding of the importance of the sector to the economy. And obviously, we're working closely with all our stakeholders in different sectors of the economy and public stakeholders as well, all of whom are working hard to make sure we respond in a pragmatic and sensible view to this. So it's been a real roller coaster over the last 6 or 7 months or so, Kieran, but especially the last 3 weeks. And, you know, despite all the challenges that are going to present when the economy comes into lockdown, at one level, it's a great challenge to be part of something that can make a big difference. And I keep making the point to our own team in BPFI, you know, the banks can make a big, big difference to ordinary people's lives in terms of mortgages and working capital and support systems that we can put in place. It really matters, and not that we have those systems in place that help people through this period of time. But also, it's important that we have a competitive, economically sustainable, economically viable industry that competes to the highest international standards. And certainly my work with the European Banking Federation and other colleagues in other banking associations, I've learned a huge amount. The issues don't change from public policy really to the private sector. The issues are the issues. But as a very small open economy that's very, you know, vulnerable to world trends that exist positively and negatively, I suppose my time in politics has taught me about the necessity to act quickly, to act in a decisive way, and not wait forever for decisions. That's not the right approach for an industry or indeed for the public sector. We've got to do things in the here and now and try to make a difference.
Sure. We might just finish with politics, actually, because Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have agreed what can only be described as an historic policy document for coalition government, something that you might never have envisaged in your time in politics. And a lot of people, a lot of political watchers here probably never thought would happen. But after the last election results, which seems a lifetime ago now at this stage, this is what has shaken out. It looks as if Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are going to go into government together. They say it's going to be a full and equal partnership. As a former blue shirt yourself, as a man who served in government with Fine Gael, and you served as a TD and you served as an MEP as well, what's your view? How are you feeling about this?
Well, I suppose my feeling is I think the country needs a stable government with a majority. Looking back in the last number of years, with the confidence supply arrangement that existed, a lot of issues weren't dealt with because the government of the day didn't have a majority. And whatever about our political system in Ireland, there's one thing that I think is the case, that whatever government is in power, from the left to the right, wherever, it does need a majority to get its programme through the Oireachtas. So if there is to be a coalition government between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil plus others, I very much hope it'll have a majority, and for that to happen, I presume it needs another party, our parties, plus independents, who will sign up to a five-year programme, because there will be very difficult issues to be decided in the first year, 18 months, given the recession that's happening and is going to be a reality in the next 12 months or so. So I think that's important. I mean, both of those parties that you refer to are pragmatic, centre-ground parties who understand the Irish economy, who have been both central to the success of the Irish economy over the course of the last 15 years or so. And presumably everyone wants to get back to an economy which has low rates of unemployment and potential for incomes to rise. That is something that I think we all need, and something that I think both of those parties and others would want to achieve. So, I mean, I haven't seen what they're suggesting. I understand it's a platform to entice other parties and work with other parties, and we'll have to just wait and see. But I very much hope we have a government soon. I think it's really important. I think the government has done a fantastic job in the last number of weeks, you know, from the Taoiseach to Simon Harris to Minister Donoghue to the whole, you know, Minister Joe McHugh, Heather Humphreys. They've done a very, very good job in a very, very challenging circumstance. Now the kind of goodwill that's there to the government, you know, won't last forever, because as we get to the rebooting stage, big decisions will have to be taken. So the bigger the majority, I think, is important. I know when I was in government, we were in government with the Irish Labour Party. We had a massive majority and we lost people along the way in terms of some of the hard decisions that had to be taken. So you do need a kind of national government with a big majority that's prepared to take on hard decisions and prepared to do the right thing for the country, because we still need a lot of capital investment, as I said earlier, on housing and health, but also especially in pensions. We need to deal with that issue. And I hope, I mean, if this new government comes to pass, I wish it every success. And I hope the banks and the payment sector in Ireland can play their part in helping the success of that government too.
Yeah, I mean, some of the smaller parties seem to be running away from this idea of coalition with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael at the minute, so we'll have to wait and see how that transpires. Some difficult conversations for Leo Varadkar, no doubt, in the weeks ahead when he tells people that they're going to lose their ministerial positions as well. Just wondering, you know, whenever the next election is in 4 or 5 years' time, let's say, how does Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, how do they differentiate themselves from each other to the public? And does this not just open the ground for Sinn Féin next time around?
All I would say to people is that, I mean, when I was in the European Parliament and working also in the European Council, you know, I saw governments of many different parties, frequently similar enough parties, parties of the centre-left, centre-right, big parties working together. And then at the next election, those parties go and fight their own platform and fight on the basis of their record. If the government is successful over the next 5 years, and I hope it's a government that we get for a five-year period, it then goes to the people and seeks a mandate, either individually or collectively, and fights on the basis of its record. And I suppose the record will be decided on housing, on health, on income support, and on taxation. But we shouldn't realise this isn't unusual. In virtually every other European Union country, you have similar parties, biggish parties working together in a coalition government, and then they fight the next election separately or collectively, as the case may be. You know, we have a normal European democracy. We have a splintering of the vote, yeah, in recent years, where the two big parties were once at 70 or 80%, now are collectively on, what, 40-something percent. So, I mean, you know, nothing stays the same in politics, Ciarán. That's the point I want to make. Nothing stays the same. And there's a terrible arrogance that people think that the next election results will be any indication of what's happened in the last number of weeks or months. And they're you know, people who think that, you know, it doesn't happen that way. Things move on very quickly in politics. And if the government, a new government, can sort out the people's concerns and can demonstrably show that things have improved over a five-year period, you know, a week is a long time in politics, as they say. 5 years is an absolute eternity. So people trying to predict now what's going to happen politically in 5 years' time, it's an exercise in futility as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, well, we'll see how that plays out in the weeks ahead. And that's it for this week from Inside Business. My thanks to Brian Hayes from the Banking Federation. Declan Conlon produced the show with JJ Vernon as sound engineer. Remember, you can get the latest business news straight into your inbox by signing up to our Business Today email at irishtimes.com. And you can also follow the Irish Times business feed on Twitter, LinkedIn and Facebook each day. I'm Ciarán Hancock. Until next time, take care, stay safe and stay home.